In 2001, I wrote a book called The Waterhouse Girl, creating a character called Daisy Waterhouse, who is only 11 but who has alopecia. And she changed my life. Just recently, I've written a sequel, and it's now May 2015 as I talk. The book's about to be published on the 20th of May. And I've taken Daisy on another 5 years so that she's 16. I think everyone connected with alopecia knows that the worst possible time to lose one's hair is the teenage years, when girls in particular are acutely aware of how they present to the world and how that world judges them. So, I've used that understanding to create a new character called Rowan, who does really struggle with alopecia. She meets Daisy, my heroine from the first book, and that's when things begin to change for Rowan. Daisy opens her eyes to new ways of looking at alopecia, at looking of ways of looking at herself, if you like, and ways of looking at the world. So I'm going to read the beginning of the story just to give you a flavour of the voice of Rowan. You will meet her mum, Jules Fig, on the first page too. I'm Rowan, so I'm named after a tree. Long before I met Daisy, I asked Mum why they didn't give me a pretty flower name like Heather or Rose. Mum said girls waste too much time and energy trying to be pretty when really they need to be tough. So she gave me a name that's strong. But 18 months ago, she must have thought her plan had gone badly wrong. My branches were blowing around like ribbons, and my roots weren't holding. I might as well have been Lala or Lace. My mother, Julie May Fig, has no time for wimps. She's like an old Egyptian pyramid. She can't be shifted, and getting around her is hot and tiring. When I was little, if I argued about bedtime or homework, she'd say, "Jules rules," with a forefinger aimed right at me. I wasn't fooled by the big grin. These were fights, and she aimed to win. By 11, I called her seriously embarrassing. Other girls had mums who were soft and sympathetic, but mine just made jokes and winked. Now, how do mothers of girls with alopecia handle the situation? How do they support them? Whether they're sympathetic, tender, emotional, cry a lot, whether they take the line that there are worse things in the world and life isn't always easy and you might as well just deal with it and not let it make you small. Whichever way they, through their own personality and experience, handle it, it might not be the right way for the particular individual girl involved. So I have a mother who's very different from her daughter. But I also, in Daisy, have a new friend for Rowan, who's completely the opposite of Rowan herself. But before we meet Daisy, I'm just going to read a little extract from a little further on, which is about the beginning of alopecia for Rowan. She's in France, staying with her dad and her stepmum, Mireille. Mireille asked if I wanted to freshen up, possibly because my top was glued to my back. When I arrive each summer, it always feels like 50 degrees in the shade. The shower is just one end of the bathroom past the bidet, and when you're finished, you mop the water across the tiles and down a kind of grating. Only I noticed the floor wasn't draining properly because the hole was blocked with my hair. I had to turn off the shower and pick it all out, which felt gross. In the mirror, when I faced it, I only looked horribly white and flat-headed. I was blow-drying when Mireille floated in and offered me a French plait. "Your hair has grown so long," she said. Even when she makes a pointless comment like that, she still sounds classy. The styling offer wasn't one I was likely to hear at home. "Merci beaucoup," I said, and she started. A breeze stirred the long curtains at the French doors, but I felt as if my whole body had soaked up the dry heat. "I've been losing a lot of hair," I said. About the same moment, she stopped brushing. "Yes," she said. That was all. One word can tell you plenty. There was a kind of hush in it. "You haven't been pulling it, Rowan?" "What? No," I cried. "Show me, I want to see." The lounge has a mirror, a big one I hated because it made me feel like I was on film all the time, but didn't know my lines. She jiggled a hand mirror until I saw what she'd found. Right in the centre, there was a hairless patch of pink scalp, bigger than a biscuit. Mum could have fitted a burger on it. Mireille said all the right things, but I didn't hear them. I was staring at the back of my own head, just like I'd look at a dead badger in the road. So there is Rowan, struggling very naturally with something that has begun to scare her. Rowan's a pretty girl. She likes what the mirror shows her. The rest of her life is not easy, but she's prided herself on her figure, being fashionable, on her beautiful hair. So I'm going to leave Rowan's story there and just say that she meets Daisy at an Alopecia UK support group. But I'm now going to read an extract from another story that I've slipped in at the back of this one. So what you get is a full-length young adult novel, but then there's a kind of postscript. It is a complete story in a very different style, and it's called The Goddess. I'll let Rowan herself introduce it to you at the end of her story. We might lose some beautiful places and species if we don't hold on a lot tighter. Daisy told me about a raised coral island called Banaba that won't survive if sea levels keep rising. It's got no fresh water, but it's beautiful. And Daisy says the weird bit is that it's shaped like a bear head. The history of the islands is really interesting and sometimes bloody, with lots of greed and exploitation thrown in, along with a missionary called Captain Walkup. I found a story set there, a kind of fable called The Goddess. Even though it's just been written by an author friend of Daisy's with alopecia, it feels like it's out of time. But I hope those islands aren't. Here's a taster of The Goddess. Nebubara woke before the sea. It breathed no louder than her sister in sleep. Nebubara woke before the sun, while the sky was still purple. Each night was hotter and shorter. Her people thought she had no fear. They trusted her, and like the pandan tree, their faith must bear sweet fruit. Nebubara was blessed. She was their queen, their holy one. The young men shaded their lowered heads from the light of her beauty. But the rain so rarely came, and when it did, it teased the people out to paddle below the clouds with their coconut shells. The harder they pushed through spray in their canoes, the faster the rain clouds fled. First to rise, Nebubara drank in the morning, but her throat was dry. Her sister's hair clung like seaweed to rock. It caught salt and sand. It soaked up heat. As Nebubara stepped lightly past, she lifted one cool hand to the top of her smooth, bare head. It was her father who said the island itself was the shape of it, in the eyes of the birds above. and no one asked him how, without flying, he knew. Purity was what he saw, a pearl, unblemished, clear and fragrant as fresh water. She was their goddess. She must guide them through life and beyond, where the dreams led on. Nebubra had been afraid at first of the air that found her skin. Without hair, her head had seemed small, like a nut with no shell. "Is it me?" she thought. "Am I who I was? Was I always a goddess, in hiding, growing up as one of them?" They were questions she never asked the father, who placed a crown of whitest flowers around her head. "What if I am just a girl, after all?" Now, without her father, she gave her own answers. She had been born among them to understand their fears, their vanity, their greed and sadness. But it was the hair she had lost that set her apart. It was a sign and a promise. The soles of her feet were tough. The sand was fine and white. Nebubra looked up to the sky that was her birthplace. Purple would bleed into blue, and the sun would glare through the breeze to scorch the rocks. Nebubra lifted her head and raised the palms of her hands out above the waves towards the breaking dawn. Closing her eyes, she imagined rain on her tongue, tapping on her scalp, running down her cool, dry cheeks. The goddess willed it. If not today, then tomorrow. Her power could not fail. I'll leave Nebubra there, hoping for rain, being worshipped by the islanders as a goddess. So what I've done is inverted alopecia and made it special, holy, rather than treating it as a difference that makes people feel inferior, less, or diminished. I had often thought maybe there might be a planet somewhere where no one had hair. And if someone landed in a spaceship and got out with a head full of hair, everyone would look in astonishment and possibly even dismay, stroke, disgust. So in this book, I bring together alopecia and many other things I believe in about respect, about caring for each other and the planet through character. Not just Rowan and Daisy, but the mum you've already met, who turns out to have problems of her own, and a boy called Flame, who has a very different kind of life, plus a granny. Rowan has a granny called Sylvie, who is French, and who tries to save her, but then is struck by dementia. So there's a lot in the book, and I really hope you'll enjoy it.